Well, hello again. This is Neil Ewers in Madison. And this is, I hope, the last podcast I'm going to make on the Zoom recorder. This podcast will be in a number of sections, just some sort of miscellaneous things that I have done. The first of which is a brief ride in the car that I recorded on the way to Milwaukee to buy another model train. The second will be the model train, and maybe a couple others. And the third will be just some miscellaneous facts that I have learned since the last podcast. Well, before I do anything else, I promised somebody that I would A/B this recorder and its internal microphone with the mini-disc recorder and the AT-822 microphone of Audio-Technica. I sort of did that on the last podcast, but sort of unobtrusively. This time, I'm going to specifically say this is what I'm doing. This is the internal microphone of the Zoom, and now to the mini-disc with the Audio-Technica AT-822 stereo microphone. And that is what I have done. This is the Audio-Technica AT-822 microphone going into the Minidisc MZR900, which is not a high-end Minidisc or not a high MD unit. I sent the ones that I reviewed back because I really didn't think I was going to be using Minidiscs that much more. There's probably some difference, I can't really tell at the moment, between this and the Zoom. But the Zoom is certainly quieter than any other recorder I've heard in terms of mic preamp. And of course, on the Zoom, you don't have the noise of the recorder. Lovely. Now, it's true that the high MD units are quieter, so that's something to consider. But just for the sake of comparison, now let's go back to the Zoom recorder and see what the difference is. And that is what I have done. This is, again, the internal microphone of the Zoom recorder, the Zoom Handy 4-track recorder. And I think that's all we need to do to compare those two. So, on to other things. What about a trip to Milwaukee, or at least little snippets of that trip? First, a brief explanation about what you're going to hear. The first part of this automobile trip was actually not very well recorded by me. I'd been used to using my AT-822 microphone, which if you hold straight up and have one capsule pointed toward me and one pointed toward my wife, works very well. Because this is a narrower spread, 90 degrees as opposed to 110, it didn't work all that well. So you hear a lot of road noise. What I should have done is actually held the recorder out in front of me, or out in front of us, and pointed it at us, and I think that would have been a lot quieter. And then at some point, I bring the recorder back in front of me and start talking into it at a somewhat closer range, and I believe you'll hear some interesting things. So, part of a trip to Milwaukee. Now we're traveling a bit faster. How fast are we going?
64.
On a very bumpy, well, not bumpy, but gets cold enough that there are all kinds of expansion cracks and bumps and whatever in the road. Now, if I really wanted to hear the limiter work on this thing, I'm recording on medium mic attenuation. I would turn it up to high. SM57, less bass than the normal default mic, so back to the Shure. Now we go up one more to the Sennheiser, strange sounding guy. This is the Neumann. And now I think with the AKG we're going to get a lot more bass as a truck passes us. I think this is the most bassy and the most treble-oriented, fuller frequency than any of the other mics I have on this mic model. So let's work our way back through them. Neumann, Sennheiser, Shure, which seems to have the least bass, and Default. One of the nice things about having a cardioid microphone in a situation like this is, as we travel along at 70 miles an hour, actually 74, is that you don't pick up as much of the sounds in the background because these mics are not omnidirectional. So you can actually maximize the sound of your speech relative to the background sounds. That's not always what you might want to do, but in this case, it works quite well. You know what I find very interesting about these recordings, other than their sound, is that I forgot that I had the recorder on MP3. So all those automobile sounds are recorded on MP3, 128 kbps. Not a bad sound. All right, moving right along. As promised, some model trains. Two of them, in fact. The first one is a diesel. A Union Pacific very large diesel. Six-axle diesel. Six axles on both ends. And it's actually two trains hooked together, two diesels, one facing frontwards, one facing backwards. It is a Rail Sounds 5, one of the new updated sound chips, and has 8 RPM speeds, as opposed to the 4 which the Rail Sounds 4 sounds had. So it sounds quite realistic. I'm going to record it with the Danish Pro Audio microphones in a binaural setting, and here is the Union Pacific diesel.
988 here. Starting shutdown procedure.
And it occurred to me that we didn't record the train using the internal mic of the Zoom. So that's what I'm going to do now. I'm going to turn on my transformer. And we're going to use the internal mic to record the diesel going around the track at least a couple times. By the way, that was recorded on the middle mic attenuation switch, not the highest, not the lowest, and that seemed to work okay. One of the interesting things was that you can hear the cars go by much nicer on this setup because A, the mics are closer to the track, and B, they are very directional, so you hear precisely the cars. And the diesel going by actually causes the bass proximity effect to kick in, so it actually sounds very nice going by. It was about 3 inches from the train. The mics I used before were a lot further, well, maybe a foot, and they were more omnidirectional. And you'll notice that the internal mic, when the train gets away from the microphones, it doesn't sound as loud because you're not picking up as much of the ambience of the room. But it's a nice sound nonetheless. And it does tell you something about what you can do with the internal mics. The next engine you'll hear is a very unusual one. It's a steam engine that actually has the cab in the front of the train. It is a Southern Pacific Railway engine. I think there were a couple other railroads that used it, but primarily this was used by the Southern Pacific because over the Sierra Nevada mountains there were a lot of snow sheds. And when the trains went through them, the smoke and the steam would be so overwhelming if you were in the back of the boiler that they just about smothered the engineer. So they first tried turning the train around and backing over. That didn't really make a lot of sense. And they ultimately built what's called cab forwards. Looks almost like a diesel, except it has pistons and makes a steam engine noise. Now, This train, unlike a lot of the ones that you've heard from me in the past, has a Rail Sounds 5 chip in it. It's supposedly an advantage over the Rail Sounds 4, which was a previous sound chip. In some ways I like it, in some ways I don't. One of the things they've done is to make it more prototypically correct, in that there are 4 engine steam chuffs per each wheel revolution, which is exactly what it should be. Up to this point, there have been only 2 chuffs per wheel revolution. Now, that sounds better to me as it goes by me, because it sounds, at the speed at which it's going, much more natural. It is, however, more in scale with the model to have 4 chuffs per revolution. So, it sounds like it's going a lot faster than some of my other trains that you have heard in the past in podcasts, even though it's not. So anyway, a short snippet of the cab forward. By the way, the engineer is a bit whistle-happy because he likes the sound of his whistle. And so much for trains. One of these days, I keep promising, but one of these days maybe I will make a train podcast. Oh yeah, sure, he says. And speaking of different sounds, there is a sound that I didn't think I was going to be able to record. In fact, I didn't even know it was going to be around. Outside my house this morning was a tree trimming truck. And fortunately, it stayed there long enough for me to use both the internal microphone of the Zoom and the Danish Pro Audio microphones, which are the binaural microphones. So, here is a recording. Both microphones recorded on the second mic attenuation position. You'll notice the difference, I think, when we fade from one to the other, because the stereo spectrum of the binaural headphones is wider. So you'll notice the sound sort of spread out, from XY, which sounds more like it's in the middle of your head, to binaural, which sounds like it's more to the left and the right. So here is Tree Trimming Truck on both internal mic and binaural mics. someone asked me about line-in, and the only way you can do line-in on this recorder is to go to the third click down on what I have been calling the mic attenuation switches, and that's what I think they're called in the manual. However, the third position down using external sources is about the level of line-in. Why, thank you. So what I'm going to do is play a little portion of a screen reader using Eloquence. When the screen reader actually comes through my sound card, it is about 0 dB. I'm going to play this and not change the volume of what it actually records at so that you can hear how closely this approximates line level. So I'm on the bottom click of the attenuation switch in both channels, going in externally, this time through the quarter-inch plugs, and let's hear some synthesizer.
Hello, this is being recorded on line-in on the Zoom Andy 4-track recorder. I will see how high the volume goes. I am on the low microphone attenuation position, which is very close to a line-level signal. So now, let's see how this works.
And now some odds and ends about this recorder to sort of end this podcast. I think I mentioned briefly the other day that phantom power on this recorder includes both 48 and 24 volts. What's interesting about 24 volts, assuming your microphone can take it, is that it uses way less battery power. So were you to have a microphone that operated on 24 volts and were operating this recorder on battery, you'd get a lot more battery life than you would at 48 volts. And speaking of batteries, I'm going to see about getting an external battery pack to get rid of the sound. I'm told that if the recorder can tolerate at least twice what the AA batteries give it, perhaps the battery pack will do exactly what the AC adapter does, and that is prevent the whistle. The AC adapter specs for this recorder, 9 volts, 300 mA, center minus plug. So I'll let you know how that works. I'm actually using it at this point plugged into AC. And let's remind ourselves of how much whine there is when used on battery power. Well, it's there. You could certainly hear it in a quiet setting. If you paid attention to it, it would be annoying. In most settings with any kind of background noise at all, which there isn't very much in this room, except my computer, you probably wouldn't hear it, but it is there. The next thing I've been asked about is floor noise. How loud is the floor noise on this recorder? Well, I'm going to give you about 15 seconds of floor noise, at which time I'm going to turn back on the microphone without saying anything, so in case you have your volume up really high, it won't blow your speakers. So here is floor noise. Actually, I'm going to fade in the microphone when I come back, so that makes it even less likely that you're going to blow something. Actually, what I'm going to do, I'm not going to turn the volumes all the way down. I'm simply going to go to the third position on the mic gain switch, which is where I normally record line in, realizing that if one uses an external microphone preamp, this is what one would do. So what kind of noise would be furnished by the recorder on the typical line-in setting? Here it is. And since I have not taken the card out yet to measure the noise on either SoundForge or Studio Recorder, I will do that now. I get about minus 84.3 on Studio Recorder. Not bad for this recorder. And there is very little that is bad on this recorder given the price. There is the whine, and there certainly are the inaccessible menus. And people will simply have to decide if Those are something they can deal with. I mean, there are just a number of things that might make it a difficult recorder for a lot of people to use. It doesn't have a pause button. It doesn't have a dedicated hold button. It doesn't even, in fact, really have a stop button. You're basically pressing the play button, and if you press it one more time, it's in play. So you do run the risk of not recording something unless you're really careful. Quality-wise, oh man, it is much better. And I have yet to even delve into the four-track stuff. If I do, I might make another podcast. I may not even get there, though. So we'll just have to see. Somebody wanted me to demonstrate the compressor. I did this on the first podcast, and I said it really didn't work. Well, let me turn it on, and you can tell that the floor noise even compresses itself. Well, I'm on high mic attenuation. If I go to low mic attenuation, it actually reasonably works. The suggestion was that this is what you might use for telephone conversations, where your voice is always louder than the person on the other end, unless you've got one of those fancy telephone patches. So plug this into some sort of telephone adapter that you can buy from Radio Shack or whatever, and it might work. So were I to make lots of noise, well, let me beat on the windscreen. That's a pretty inappropriate thing to do, but notice that it works, and the sound comes back up. Now, I'm leaving this at its original volume. If you weren't on compressor and just on low mic, in fact, that's where you would be if you were simply on low mic without the compressor on. So that's how much the compressor is raising the volume of the low mic attenuation. And so on this setting, it actually may work. Well, I think that's about all for this podcast. We've heard trains, we've heard cars, we've heard tree trimming trucks. I will at some point do a train podcast. The diesel sound you heard wasn't the most unusual diesel sound I have. Well, it's what it was, and they all have different sounds, and in fact, all the train sounds that I have in my trains are the actual sounds of the trains that some person went out and recorded. Now, wouldn't you like to have that for a job? So you actually get the sound of the real train, the specific train, and the specific whistle, etc. All right. I think this is the last podcast I'm going to do. If anybody has any more questions, please get in touch with me on any list that I'm on, or write me at neal@ravenswood.org. I hope you've enjoyed our little get-together. So I take my leave and wish you all a good day, and we'll talk again soon.